We're hearing submissions on the proposed Southland Water and Land Plan. Just before we turn to the submitters, Mr. McCallum Clark, anything to report from the officers?
Nothing today.
Okay, thank you very much. The first submitter I have on my list this morning is the White Partnership. So, good morning and welcome. We've read your original submissions. Thank you very much for putting that together. You don't need to reread that out to us. But you are very welcome to speak to that submission and outline the key points you'd like us to take on board.
Thank you. Yep. I'll read this for a start. Good morning. My name is Blair and I'm here on behalf of the White Family Partnership, which consists of my wife and four children. We farm in the Black Hills on close to 1,000 hectares, and the home farm has been in the family for close to 100 years. There's nothing that concerns me or our family more than having good water quality in our region, as we are keen fishermen, enjoy water skiing, and the thought of not being able to swim in our rivers and lakes is unthinkable. However, we are very passionate about farming and have great concerns about the cost the regional council are imposing on our farm and our ability to farm in the future. With what seems to be endless consents and the filling out of paper trail that consumes a huge amount of our time with no resulting improvement in water quality. One thing I find outstanding is there doesn't seem to be any set costs to what these consents are going to cost us. And that would be like going quoting for building a house when you don't know what the timber is going to cost. Improving water quality has to be a team approach and based on good science, because there's no person alive who is not having an effect on the quality of our water. And unfortunately, the blame seems to have been placed very unproportionately on our farmers. And I didn't see very many things in the plan to address the water quality coming out of our towns. And so many things could be done, such as the use of water that comes out of the sky, slowing down stormwater, and the use of sewage for fertiliser. As far as farming goes, in the last 10 years, I've seen a huge improvement on the way farmers view our environment. And that has come through education and things like environment awards, and not a Hitler approach with fines and consents. We started fencing off our gullies over 20 years ago, and recently we had an Environment Southland and to put a plan into place for our future. And with all the creeks that we have, only 2.7 kilometres of the creeks were unfenced, which 900 metres of it has just been completed, leaving us 1.8 kilometres left to fence. We won't be happy until the rest is done. It does come at a cost, as when we fence off our gullies, our natural shelter is taken away and shelter needs to be grown, and this doesn't happen overnight. And now, as regarding the rules of I just looked at some of the rules that were going to affect what we've been doing of late. Rule 60 with a building of a dam wall 4 metres or less for a pond and a wetland. It states in the rule that a engineer's certificate is required for a dam wall. This is under 4 metres. We've got 9 ponds that I've built on the property. So there's one. The construction of that dam alone, and that's hard to tell, it's actually over 4 metres, that dam, which is one I built back in 96-97. To get an engineer's certificate into that dam alone would be in excess of $1,000. That's not without building the dam, and that dam there wouldn't be allowed to be built because it's over 4 metres. There's one that's under 4 metres, but once again we'd have to get an engineer's certificate to build that thing. That's one of the later ones that's been put in and fenced. There's one I did probably 6-7 years ago, so we've actually planted more natives up in the tussock there and just providing a wetland. I'll go back one. So I can't understand, we'll just disregard that, I can't understand why we need to get an engineer's certificate to build a dam wall. I can understand that, we're talking under 4 metres for a start. What is it going to improve the water quality by getting an engineer's certificate on that dam wall? So that's the first one that I had grievance with. Rule 25 states the cultivation on sloping ground restricted to 20 degrees. There's the header that we've imported from UK to do air rolling ground. We actually cultivate our crops to get a good crop. That's done in the springtime or autumn time, whichever. So that header is well and truly capable of doing more than 20 degrees. And we do more than 20 degrees. Admittedly, there's only small parts of the paddock that that we're going to actually go over the 20 degrees. But if you leave those pieces out, the weeds in that, they grow just phenomenal. You can't control them. And I just can't see why we're going down that road. So there's another one. There's been no runoff on that. There can't be any runoff on that. That's over 20 degrees there where the header's been around. That's part of the paddock. There's another one that was very, very close to it. The actual, that's a 10 hectare paddock. There's about a hectare and a half that's over the 20 degrees. You can see that the creek comes out on the left-hand side there. That's all been fenced off. There's more than 16 metres between the edge of that fence and the creek. We go to Rule 14, states no water fertilizers to be applied to waterway lifts. We do quite a lot with a helicopter and aerial top dressing. Very, very hard to come down to try and stop a plane from throwing fertilizer just on the edge of the creek bed. Intensive winter grazing is another one that we've got a bit of a problem with. I think it all comes down to management, in my opinion. There's that ground there has been worked over 20 degrees. One of the things with that there is it won't carry the stock that a intensive flat paddock will carry. That crop there is weighed in about, on the side of that face there, is weighed in about 6 tonne. Now, we're going to start the winter program cropping on the top of the hill because naturally we've got to be able to get a bit of hay and silage into the top of the ground. This will be the last piece of the paddock that gets fenced off to Eton. It's going to be dry. We're only going to use that for sheep anyway. The degree and ground and working the ground to put the crops in, 20 degrees is not great enough. If we could average it over the ground that's worked, that would be a far better solution to your 20 degree rule. So there's another piece of ground that's on the same sort of nature of thing. This is to do with our sheds. This is to do with 50 hectares. In one land holding we have 1,000 hectares, and I know you've been told this a time and time again, but 50 hectares of cropping ground on 1,000 hectares is nowhere near enough. It has to be on a percentage basis because otherwise we're going to take our stock down onto heavy ground, we're going to put in fodder beet crops, we're going to put in more nitrogen, we're going to have probably a third or half of it is going to go in supplements. And you'll have heard all this the time and time again, I'm sure, because it is something that's of concern to most farmers. Is 50 hectares, I have no idea where that came up from. To think that we could have 50 hectares and have the whole lot in winter crop, that's, yeah, just silly. A farm management plan, like just recently we've done a farm water plan with the Environment Southland. This is the way forward, in my opinion, is to have people come out to your farm from Environment Southland. The lady that did this was Kate. Came out, spent 2 days going around on a motorbike. Well, actually 3 days, I think she was there altogether. Went through the whole property as far as where our creeks go. Came back a week and a half, 10 days later. We had a sit down, we had a look through it. We know what we've got in the future to do. We knew what we had in the future to do anyway, but the backup plan's here. This is the way forward. It's not a consent to tell us, you know, this rule here, this rule there. Every farm's going to be different. And as I said in my argument at the start, it's going to take years to get in. If we're going to fence off our gullies and waterways, it's going to take years for a shelter to be put in and grow. So a management plan's fine, but you know, our plans change pretty well every day as far as how much stock we can take on and that sort of thing. On just back one, the nutrient budget, that was another thing. I'd like to know who can do a nutrient budget on our property. We've tried with Overseer. Overseer doesn't work on a basis where we've got a mixed crop and sheep and beef and deer all in the same farm. It just won't, because we can be taking a crop off today, we can have it in young grass in 3 days' time, we can be grazing it in 3 weeks' time after that, and that's how it goes. And Overseer will not put in a nutrient budget for that situation. We've got two wintering sheds on our property. We're actually just in the throes of putting another one. I believe wintering sheds are the way to go. I can't understand where the 99 per animals per shed come from before you have to get a consent, but I'm happy to go with that. But as far as one shed per land holding goes, that's never going to work. On our property, we've actually based our shed in a situation where we've got five good silage paddocks around it. The ultimate to bring that silage in is to have the silage paddock right beside the shed. You're the shortcut, you're bringing the silage into your pit, you're putting it beside the shed, you feed it into your shed. When it comes to the other end of the springtime, when you're actually feeding back out, you're feeding that effluent back onto those paddocks, you've taken silage out. Now if we were to create a shed, only having one shed, we'd have to put 250, 300 animals in that one shed. So I'm gonna have to cart silage from pretty well the other end of my farm, which I've got paddocks at the other end of my farm, cut it all to my shed, and then in the summertime when it's come time to put the effluent on, I'm going to have to cart all that effluent all the way back. The economics of it is just it doesn't work. You're better to plan towards a shed. So why is it that we only allow one per landholding? We've got 1,000 hectares. Surely it must be another way of working that so that we can have two or three or so many metres apart. You know, say maybe 800 metres between two sheds. So that's where we're at there. We're opposed to the aerial drop of 1080. 1080 is a poison to control possums and culvert pipes was another one that I looked into. I'm wondering why you have a rule of only allowing go to 1.2 metres before you have to have a consent. There's a 1.2 metre culvert. So in a flooding situation when we do get really heavy rain, that culvert overflows. It not only backs up right back up into the paddock, the water flows out, the amount of erosion you get in that thing is unbelievable. So there's one that we've got further down the farm, not a very good example that unfortunately, but that's 1.8 metres. Now what would the difference be between putting that one in there and a 1.2 metre culvert pipe? So why is the culvert pipe being restricted to 1.2 metres, I'd like to know. Because surely the bigger culvert pipe the better. As you can see, the water is actually stagnant through that culvert pipe. So you know, that's a benefit out the other side with less erosion. So this is just one for the towns. I look at townhouses going up. 2,500 litre water tank would cost roughly $3,000. Most houses are looking at about maybe $400,000 to build a new house. If you put a 25,000 litre tank at the end of the house, in my opinion, seen flooding and that overseas. If you take a half inch hose out of it halfway down the tank, when we get a heavy downfall of water, the tank fills up and then slowly goes back into the water system and into the rivers. And then they've got another 1,000 or 1,200 or 12,000 litres to clean their cars and do your vegetable gardens and that thing. We seem to be consistently listening to the Gore having trouble with water restrictions and that thing. Surely it's a small cost to pay is to put a tank on the end of everybody's house. And that's about all.
Thank you very much, Mr. White. We'll see if we have any questions for you.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Chairman. That was very clear, thank you. That was very good. I just did have one question. You showed us some pictures of some crop on a slope. It looked pretty steep. Did you say what that was?
That was where the header was, or where the Swedes were, yeah. Mm. Yep.
What degree of slope was that, do you think?
That's around about 23. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Looked.
Yeah, so that's one there. We're only working on there. I've got an app on my phone, so you hold the phone up as the slope. That was 23. Some of the cropping ground we've got sitting up around that 21, 22.
Yeah.
Our combine has a 28 degree tolerance, so it's 14 degrees either way. And you generally go not much more than 6 or 7 degrees over that. So our 20 degree, most of the time for a cropping operation will be okay. But unfortunately, likes of this paddock here will get grain in it after that Swedes come off. So we will be putting a head around that crop, that paddock, yeah.
So that looked like a fairly fancy machine. Are there many of those around?
We have to actually import them into the country because the local dealers are Canterbury Plains, so we have to bring them in ourselves, yeah.
So that'll harvest crop up to what degree?
Well, it was it's 28 degrees. The one we've got now is 28 degrees. Okay. We're just looking at bringing in another one at the moment, which has got another 3 degrees in it, so we're looking at 30 degrees. So 15 degrees either way, yeah.
And you don't get any soil runoff from those slopes?
The crops are in the ground. They get put in the ground in October. Generally speaking, the crop's up within less than a week. Within 10 days, it's sitting up like this here. So the chances of runoff are very, very slim. Probably our biggest chance of runoff is in autumn sowing. So we'll take a crop off and then we put in barley or wheat or something to come, so it comes off very early at the other end. So we get our young grass back in to fatten our lambs. So that's our biggest chance of runoff. But even those, our winter barley's now, we've actually grown a winter barley, which actually goes in maybe 3 to 4 days after the crop's harvested. And at that time of the year, within 10 days, we've got cover again. A very, very small chance of runoff then. I've been farming for a lot of years and I haven't seen it yet. I've had more trouble putting young grass in November, December, and getting runoff at that time of the year than I ever have in this cropping situation that we've been in. And our buffer zones are huge. We've actually got, as I say, we've got all our fences gullies fenced off. So we actually fence completely off the gully because we have a lot of gorse and broom. This property in particular was covered in gorse and broom when we originally bought it. Mm. So we've fenced them off so we can intensively graze those gullies in October and November when the wee gorse bush has just got one leaf of flower on it. And that's essential. So a lot of these gullies we've never been back once we resprayed the gorse and broom out. But one thing we do find is that if we'd left that face around there uncultivated, within 1 year of putting it back in the young grass, I'd be spraying gorse and broom in that thing. There's been 1 year seeding is 100 years weeding. I'll guarantee that my family and my future generations will be still weeding in that place as far as gorse and broom goes.
Okay, thanks very much. That's very good. Thank you.
Edward? No, very clear, thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Thanks, Pete.
Good. Just one clarification more than anything. You've got the plan there from AES. Do you take ownership of that? Is it something you're going to keep updated?
That was something actually she said she'd come back, but there was no update time. And this is the way that I see the future, is for them to come out, or for somebody like the girl that came out, have a look around the property, put a time frame on that, and say in 5 years come back and see what improvements have been made. Because like farmers have been making improvements, it's what they've been doing is environmental awards and all that sort of thing have put us in, we're heading towards trying to get things better. And we always have been anyway, I'm sure, we're good custodians of the land. But
So what I was getting at was if you've got the plan, would you go back and update it as you do stuff so that when she comes in she can actually see what you've ticked off?
Yes, yes. Well, we've actually got this huge amounts, there's maps of there are a small amount of wooded ways that weren't fenced. We went through that the other day when she came in, and I said, well, this one's to be done and this one's to be done, and we've already ticked off two of those already. And she wants us to put in a water pond at the bottom end of one of her properties. It's going to be quite a big job because there's a huge flow of water there, but already we're planning towards how we can get around that, and it'll get done. Yeah, it may not be this year, but it will be in the next 3 or 4 years, because I'm keen duck hunter anyway, and I've got my own digger, I have a tendency to sort of see things that need done and just get on and do it. Yeah, but no, I don't want to see a big consent cost with that, because that just slows the process down.
All right, thanks, Mr. White. I don't have any further questions either. The points you've made have been made very clearly, and they're consistent with what we've been hearing from other submitters. But it is encouraging to hear that you're committed to putting that plan into effect. So thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.